I want to talk about the wave vector power spectrum here. And there have been various ideas Seamus has covered of what it might be due to. It certainly looks like it's due to quasi-particle interference. But there are interesting set of papers that involve stripes. We heard about Kapitulnik describing his data on this. Periodic modulation of other types of weak symmetry breaking and fluctuating order. And Platte and I have been talking about some of this. So what's the point that I want to make? I want to just show you a couple of things and then comment about some results. So what I'm showing you are old things. These happen to be pictures of what would happen with an S wave if you were to do scanning tunneling around some sort of impurity at a voltage of 1.1, say, times the maximum gap, and you see the symmetry. And down here, this is the D wave, and off in this direction would be Q7. These would be others of the Q, and there are 8 of them. And then the question is, what happens when you put a bunch of impurities in? Because our original picture was somehow you put one impurity and you tried to look around it. What if you have a bunch of them? Then, for various reasons, I've been thinking about this in the context of a lake. So you have a lake, and in the lake you have boulders and motorboats and other things go by, and they create the ripples. And then, depending on the array of rocks you have sticking up out of the lake, you may see a nice ripple pattern if there were one rock. But if there was another rock somewhere around it, you begin to see something like that. And then if there were yet another one somewhere, you'd see things like this. And now what's happening is you begin to see, as you all know, a kind of mess. On the other hand, you know that if you Fourier transformed this and took its power spectrum, you could pull out, just as they are, out of this mess, you could pull things out. Now, it also might be, though, that the rocks were arranged in a very regular way and in a stripe way. And under these conditions, of course, you would pull that out, not so much out of the omega dependence, which determines really the spacing of these waves. In other words, has it been a Tahoe steamer that's gone by or been a rather small speedboat? You get different wavelengths. That's set by the quasi-particle interference. But if you could eliminate that aspect and go after the underlying structure here, then you'd be picking up this structure factor of whatever's causing this. Now, naturally, although I don't think we need at this late date to see much of this, it gets much fancier once you begin to impose the D wave, because there you have 8 different ripples coming out of the rock. And then you have multiple rocks, and you have to go through this marvelous Fourier transformed STM that you've heard about to pull it out. But I would like to say that it is, so it's these two aspects I want to talk about. I want to talk about the quasi-particle interference and what you should see, which we've already heard a bit about, a good bit about, and how you might then also extract from that what the underlying structure is of the object that scatters. Picture I have always is this is weak Born approximation. As it goes beyond Born approximation, then you have these rocks interfering with the properties of the water. And right now, I don't want that. Although certainly you saw some rocks that were missing in the view graphs, which created these very sharp low energy resonance that we once calculated some time ago also. At any rate, so what's this talk about? Consider the weak simple scattering potential, and let's just do this for an ordinary metal to warm up, and then we'll go to S wave, and then we'll go to D wave. And so what happens is, I've just imagined that on some site, I have a slightly different site energy, delta epsilon x, and there's some distribution of these. And now, it's Born approximation, and so I propagate from where I'm interested at x, I propagate to x prime, I scatter off one of these things, and I come back because I want to eventually pull out the tunneling density of states at x. And then the experimentalists do an extremely smart thing. They take the expression, well-known expression you have here, they Fourier transform it. And then they take the power spectrum, which is the magnitude squared of this. 1 over n is L by L, which are their pixels. I don't know, 520, 60 by 560. And this is the power spectrum. We had heard about earlier data that I'll come back to where people just took the Fourier transform, adjusted some arbitrary phase to make the real part as big as possible. I frankly find that very confusing, and I think that goes to zero when the system gets large. And you've got to just have a very small system before you pick that up, and we'll talk about that later. So the end result, I believe, of a measurement where you have weak scattering, so you aren't messing with the system you're trying to study the vibrations of, is that the end answer depends on what I'll call the quasi-particle interference response, which we'll talk about, and it has this dispersive behavior that Byers, Claffé, and I talked about using to try and get at delta of k omega and z of k omega, all of the whole renormalization, oh, pardon me, the details of the strong coupling superconductor, because we knew we wanted omega dependence, and we also knew we wanted k dependence, and the k was going to come from the space. So now, you got this factor, and then you have this factor. This factor, if I could find it here, here it is just the Fourier transform of the static impurities. So it's just what, I don't know, static impurity structure factor. It could be stripes, it could be random impurities, it could be other things. It's completely static. These two multiply each other. Later you'll see that if we really do a little bit of integration over this, we can wipe out the strong Q dependence of this, leaving ourselves to look more carefully at the other aspect of the problem. Okay, so now what's the point? I guess this is one point. Suppose you have random impurities, and then you look at the Fourier transform of this potential. What you find is it just goes like the number of impurities in the pixel space you're looking at times the average strength of that. And it's Q independent. So it's not messing with your discovery of imaginary part of gamma of Q of omega magnitude squared, which is why it works so nicely. On the other hand, if you have a stripe structure with long range order, you'll pick up a dominant Q dependence. If you have an array of stripes that can always run either along the x direction or along the y direction, then you've got to expect that if you have ni domains of these that are randomly phased with respect to each other, you pick up again an ni, which is the number of the domains. But this is then a factor that tells you splotchy-wise what that structure looks like. If you then do what seems to me an interesting experiment, you integrate on omega to wipe out your quasi-particle contributions up to about the gap is what we'll see you have to do. And then you start taking your data and scale it down. And so instead of 560 angstroms by 560 angstroms, you come on down until you're, say, at 100 angstroms by 100. You're going to lose resolution, but what you're going to do is squeeze down until you're looking at one of the striped domains, if they existed. And at that point, you start picking up a function that looks like, you know, the usual Bragg scattering off a finite system as the form factor that multiplies what was the quasi-particle interference, but that's been integrated over omega, wiping out its Q and its Q dependence pretty much, which we could talk about, allowing you to look for something that may or may not be there. That's a rough idea anyway. Now, how to think about this? I like to think about it the way Byers, who was a graduate student here, and I used to talk about it, which is, can we get some measurement that looks at g of x omega? Well, let's just do this for a simplest normal metal. So for g of x omega, you do this integral, you get a Bessel function, you expand the Bessel function, and pretty soon you find that the thing that's happening, of course, is these waves coming out are coming out at P Fermi plus omega over VF, if you give the thing a little energy above the Fermi energy. And they're damping. This delta is either infinitesimal or it's not. If it's not, then delta over V Fermi is 1 over half of a mean free path, and so there's a damping factor. Then you put these things together to get at what's being studied. And right now, I'm coming off just a single impurity, but we saw before with random impurities just multiplied by the number of impurities per unit area to get what goes on. Now, you see when you square this, you get this factor of 2. And so this characteristic vector at which you guys would see this image would now be a cylinder, and maybe I'll draw a picture of it. So there'd be that, okay? So that's where you'd look for it. Let's see. What do I want to say? Let's come to this one, and then we'll backtrack. So that was the picture. Now, pardon me, that was the physical picture of what's happening in space. Now let's just really do the calculation. So this gamma of Q, which is going to tell us about the quasi-particle interference, is just G times G. This is an integral you can even do up at a lake without an integral table. At any rate, this is what you get. Okay, it's this very simple structure. If Q squared over 2m is bigger than 4 omega plus mu, you get something. If it's less, it stops. The magic Q is this, which if expanded is exactly the Q we talked about, which is the ripple. Remember, this is a normal metal. Ripple in a normal metal. Then you plot this, and remember, this was the structure of the impurity, but, pardon me, the structure of the scatterer. But since it's impurity, it's just number of impurities over the number of pixels you got times some scattering strength. Now you pull out this guy. And this guy has a characteristic shape. He goes up and becomes singular and drops off. And in a minute, I'll talk about the red line. Now, what's a little strange about this one is, let me draw what happens in Q space. You guys have your magic octet set of Qs, which I understand, and it's very nice and very important way to think about it. But at least for this problem, if you were to do it, you'd find a whole rim, a continuous set of stuff in Q, and it would go up like some sort of volcano here, and the magic Q would disperse.
That's observed. That's been going for almost a decade.
I see. Then I apologize. I've been away for almost 3 weeks, so I don't know what's known and what's not.
In the world of STM studies of noble metals,
I see.
With and then doped with impurities, people like Klaus Kern,
Chromium.
I had a one-dimensional version of this, and a two-dimensional version. Warren Plummer.
I will look for it. I'm sorry.
They didn't have functional forms to which.
Okay. Well, at any rate, this is a poor man's functional form. It's something you can just do when you don't have any books with you. Now, let's talk about what's just as easy to do too. Let's stay with the normal metal. So here's a normal metal. Now it's an electron phonon metal, and you notice I don't let this be k dependent. That's the simple phonon stuff. It's just omega dependent. Then again, once you solve it, which is exactly the same calculation I talked about to find g of x omega, you find now that it disperses as omega minus sigma over V Fermi. Square it to get the gg, scatter off one impurity, that puts a factor of 2 in, and so all at once now the characteristic vector at which you'd see this is 2p Fermi, plus now write the self-energy as 1 minus z omega. Then you can see it's 2z1 omega over that. And if you pick up the, and so therefore, this, at least, you know, in my imagination, if you could make that measurement, now you'd start correcting this with self-energy effects. And so you'd actually pull out of this distance, out of that measurement, you would pull the sort of thing we always dreamed you'd pull for the superconductors, not just the BCS, not just the Bogoliubov stuff, but the Ely-Ashberg stuff. So you begin to pull that guy out, and you'd find that your Q started up like this and then bent over as you went up above the phonon energy from above and below. You'd see the kink. Now, you ought to see the kink. Furthermore, the imaginary part will be telling you about the decay, and you can pick that up both in the shape of this function that I didn't bring the integral of this along, and in fact, I've had some trouble doing it, to tell you the truth, but it'll be asymmetric. The bend over here, the Q star will tell you about the mass renormalization, and the bending and size here will tell you about the damping. And you could also get at that just by changing your pixel size on down until you don't see changes anymore, because that'd tell you you got where the ripples have been killed.
You could do this in the normal state.
This is normal.
I understand.
I know.
You could do it in the cupid.
Yeah, you could. You could. You might wonder if Z1 is infinity, you know, if the renormalization knocks the quasiparticle out, then you need a better calculation than my simple free electron calculation. But the answer is that'd be interesting. Now, let's do the same thing for an S-wave superconductor. So remember, it's always the same game. Let me just remind us once more of it, because at least this helps my thinking about it. This power spectrum that you guys are measuring has to do with what the quasiparticles are doing and has to do with this form factor. And right now, this form factor is for random impurities, and so it's just our friend that's Q independent. It's delta epsilon squared, number of impurities over per in your field, per unit area. So we really are looking at this. Now, let's look at this for our friend the S wave. So now here's the little calculation that Flette and Byers and I did. We just, you know, it's, what's happened? Delta epsilon has a tau 3 multiplying it, okay? I don't know what to say. This is Andreev scattering. This is whatever. But this is what the density of states looks like. You can propagate there with a G or an F. I decided to take an F here just to try and tell you about the integral. You do the same thing. It's a Bessel function on the angle. You do the approximate integration here, and you get e to the I kf. Now you have square root omega squared minus delta naught squared over V Fermi times R. And this is just telling you how in the superconductor these ripples that you know, that I had a picture of here, just telling you about these ripples. Now we're going to square that and Fourier transform it. And when we square that and Fourier transform it, you get the real part of 1 over the square root of Q minus Q star, only now Q star is everywhere. It's not your banana. It'll come. Bananas will come in a minute, but it's just this cylinder we talked about. Only now the cylinder wasn't where it was before. It used to be at 2 omega over V Fermi. Now it's got altered because you got a gap, and you got to get up above a gap, and then you see it move. Now, if you were to do this experiment on lead, and if it would all work well, you'd get at this dream we always had of what you could do in the cuprates. You'll learn about delta 1 of omega and delta 2 of omega, the real and imaginary parts of the gap, and from the omega dependence, you'll learn about the interaction.
So, in principle, this can be done, and in fact, we're involved in attempting to do it right now in Niagara Basin.
Good. But do you see, it really is quasi-particle interference. That's what we said in 93. Now let's go to D-wave. So D-wave's a little more complicated, and particularly with the bananas, I couldn't do the integrals. But with a straight guy here and a small distance here and a small distance there, then all at once the energy gap has this very simple form where it disperses with a small velocity in this direction, but a large one in the other direction. That's your banana. Oh, pardon me. That's what I drew here as an ellipse. Okay? So now, what happens? Well, once again, the same game is played out. Only, let's play it out to get your special points. So let's take what you call Q7. So I'm drawing this, and now, as you said, near the corners here is where the density of states is high. And so there's going to be a lot of action there in this function, except it's now going to be continuous, not going to just be a point. And at that point, we get something like this, and we work our way through, and we find out that over here, I'll show you the full function in a minute, but at a particular Q star, which is twice this distance, which is twice this, there's going to be a very special dependence. And once again, if you had no damping, it's going to come up and cut off. I know your spots don't do that, and we have some damping, but that's the simple prediction. And let me draw that for you to try and make it, let's see. Well, no, then there's some more words. If you just do this simple analytic calculation, you find the big action. Remember, I'm only along this one oval. I got this oval, this oval, this oval, and this oval. I'm always doing this integration because I'm by myself. So that's your Q7. That ellipse you saw has a long axis, which is like your Q7, and it has a short axis. That short axis is a small Q, and it's going to be tough for you guys to see because it's going to be contained on down. But there should be some action there, and its special value is omega over square root of 2 with a T down here rather than with a delta 0. Okay? It's a big difference, so it's much shorter. The strength of this signal is down by 1 over alpha squared. So it's just like you said, near the tips it's big and it's down. But let's talk about the shape, because in an ideal world, if you had really fabulous control, more control than you have, what you'd see is something like this. This was what you call Q7. But there'd really be an ellipse here. Well, a banana. And at the tips of the banana, the function would be very high. And then it would die out and go away, and there'd be some shape to this. And from that, you could learn the types of things you've learned. And then to conclude, because I think we're all ready for lunch, what I believe goes on in these systems, if you will let me imagine that whatever I've done, which I tend to agree with Ole, is something to your bismuth oxide plane in the cleaving, and rearranged it slightly, so that I'm not going to deal with extreme strong unitary scattering I know you have in there. That would pull the T-matrix and other stuff in. I'm just going to do weak scattering. If I do, then the response, once again, knows about the quasi-particle dispersion and hopefully about the frequency and wave vector dependent of the gap and renormalization parameter. And it knows about the structure of the guys doing the scattering, which, as you told us, if it's the structure in the bismuth oxide, you see it. If there were stripes there, I think you ought to also see it. And what you'd want to do is get rid of this, which I didn't show you, but if you integrate over the functions I showed you, you pretty much knock them out of business. If you integrated here, you would lose almost all your Q dependence, and you would visualize only here, I believe. This contains the quasi-particle response. This, as I've said, contains the static structure factor of whatever you're scattering off, and it is static because you guys look at it for a month. It's the most static thing we know. And then?
Isn't the integral of the power spectrum of the Fourier transform of the local density of states, isn't that the Fourier transform of the topograph?
Aha.
And if you integrate over energy, you're adding up all the states.
Yeah, it is.
That were available.
I'm sorry.
That's what the topograph is.
Yeah, that's nice. That's what the topograph is.
So we should take topographs at low voltage extract this.
Yeah. I guess so. I think you're right. At any rate, this is, I think, what bothered me for a while and what I tried to show you with those first pictures was when I saw these pebbles or rocks at the edge of the lake, I could see that depending on whether they're ordered nicely, you get nice structure you can see. If they're ordered badly and the waves are short, you get this mess, which, as you say, the eye doesn't resolve too well, but we all know that underlying it is just the puddle structure of the thing. And the last part is just to reiterate that what you get certainly tells us about the quasi-particles, but in principle, you should be able to obtain information on the frequency dependence of the real and imaginary part of the gap, real and imaginary part of Z, and that was what motivated our work in 93, although we never imagined you could do it.
Can I ask you something?